Hello and welcome back to the latest episode of the Hulkcast. After me and Danny discussed what went down in the Stoke match, I'm joined by John McKenzie. John, how are you doing?
I'm really good. It's really good to chat. It's really good to be back on the podcast.
Yeah, so the reason John's here today is so we can get the, I guess, expert opinion on Leeds United, the expert analysis, and of course some views on the man himself, Marcelo Bielsa. So John, Leeds United, they've been something this season, and it's not the bad something that we're usually talking about. They're really good.
Yeah, you're sort of asking that question at the wrong time, I suppose, because at the moment it feels as though we've gone through a bit of a patch where we are scraping results, which I guess the old cliche says is the sign of a championship winning side. But at the moment, we are threadbare in terms of we've had a number of injuries, particularly in our defensive areas. We've had a couple of doing a Leeds moments in recent weeks. So we've had ownership travails that have been all over the news. We've just lost Samu Saez to Getafe in La Liga. So he won't be playing for us anymore. And he was a good player for us. So we still have the tendency to do the remarkable whenever, even when things seem as though they're going well. But yeah, it's been a good season. The beginning of the season was absolutely fantastic. I remember I went to a few preseason games, and in the first few preseason games, we were very experimental. We're playing a lot of youth players. A lot of the players hadn't quite come back from the summer. And then I went to Las Palmas. We played Las Palmas at Elland Road, sort of the final preseason game before the season kicked in. And I was sat there in the stands, and it was just remarkable watching what Bielsa had done with the team. It was, for the first time in a long time, it was quite clear that there was, and I hate the phrase, but a philosophy, but I'll use it as a sort of neologism that people use in football, no problem. So there was a clear tactical goal. The players were playing football like they were, and this is the cliche joke, but like Barcelona, and it was like that. It was building up play from the back, really swift verticality, getting the ball forward quickly, and having these sort of counter attacking blitzes, which have been brilliant. So I'm in dreamland at the moment, but at present, there are a few worries in the back of the minds of a few Leeds fans.
So do you think it's decreased our performance levels or anxiety over not finishing that top two? Do you think Leeds' performances have kind of steadily dropped off? And is that due to external circumstances like injuries and, as you said, losing Saez to Getafe? Do you think it's, for lack of a better word, not Bielsa's fault? Everything's going right for him. It just seems that you've had a bit of bad luck, maybe?
Yeah, I think it's... So much of what his game plan is based around having good ball players at the back. So it's a funny thing, because at the moment we've got players in the team who you might think are brilliant ball playing defenders, for example, we've got Pontus Janssen back, who we were missing at the beginning of this season because he'd obviously been playing for Sweden at the World Cup. And he came back into a side that had Liam Cooper and Gaetano Berardi, Gaetano Berardi, for those who don't know him, is a fullback, and not a particularly good fullback at that. And we were playing him at centre back, which just to Leeds fans seemed nonsensical. Liam Cooper is our captain, but he is famously questioned by many of the Leeds fans a lot of the time. But these two in Bielsa's system have been an absolute revelation, because they can both get the ball down, they can both pass it around, they've got good touch on the ball, and they can play the ball around in these sort of fours and threes that Bielsa likes his team to get into in the back, in the fullback areas, and they can maintain control and then play the ball forward quickly when they need to. Which means that when someone like Pontus Janssen comes back in, you're faced with this really bizarre scenario where you're kind of thinking, last season you would have said Janssen was our best defender, and now you're kind of worried that he's not good enough to play in this system. So it's been a real eye-opener for me to sort of appreciate the importance of how systems work in football. And I thought I kind of knew football tactically fairly well, but it's been a real eye-opener in that regard. So I think to answer your question, sorry, that's a long roundabout way of getting to the answer, but it isn't that we've dropped off so much as we've had a small squad anyway, and we've got players playing out of position, and we've got players playing in positions where you would rather not have them. And a lot of the players who've been brought in haven't been able to actually play that style of play, the Bielsa style of play, which is having good ball players at the back who can maintain control and then move the ball into more advanced areas quite quickly. So it's been a combination of those factors, yeah.
A lot of Villa fans, they look at Leeds and they're quite jealous, top two players, especially when you hired Bielsa in the summer. So let's go into that, actually. When you got Bielsa into the club, I think when the rumours were hanging around, a lot of people were in disbelief. The Championship, it's got a lot more prestige, you know, in the last 2 years than it probably has ever in its history. But attracting a man like Bielsa, is that somewhat of a coup, do you think? I mean, Leeds are a massive club, they're an establishment, but it still felt a bit odd. But it seems so right now.
Yeah, no, you're entirely right. And I think a lot of people who... Look, but Bielsa is a sort of cult figure. He is probably unfairly labelled as like the hipster's football manager or something like that, whatever that means. And that's not a debate I'm particularly interested in getting into now. But I think what the problem with Bielsa is that, since it's not so much a problem, but the thing about Bielsa is that because he is quite media reticent, there's not a huge amount of content to go off by that he's in terms of what do we know about him, like how do you talk about someone like Bielsa. And so what happens as a result of that, I think, is that narratives quite quickly spring up on and they latch onto any sort of nodule of truth that you can find in any of the ways that his team's playing. So one of the things that I think a lot of people will talk about when they talk about Bielsa is this concept of burnout, and so with that in mind, with the fact that he's not managed in England before, he's not managed in the Championship, he's managed at clubs in France, Spain, technically Italy, but then the majority of the others all over in South America, that is very, very unclear as to what was going to happen, like how it was going to play out, the Bielsa experiment at Leeds. And fortunately, it's worked out very well indeed. And the analogy that I like to use is the Goldilocks effect, which is a marketing, I guess, analogy where it's to do with pricing. So if you price something too high, people won't buy it. But if you price things too low, then people won't buy it because they think it's a bit shoddy. So the Goldilocks effect says that, you know, you have to find that sort of just right in the middle where people will think that they're getting quality and value at the same time. And I think for me, that's what Leeds has been for Bielsa, is that Goldilocks club for him. It's a big enough club. It's got the enough good players there that they can play the sort of football that you expect or he wants them to play. But at the same time, they're not so big that the players aren't willing to get behind his style of play, which is rigorous. And it does expect a lot from you, both physically and emotionally. I think it's just sort of played out perfectly for him there. And so it's been quite exciting for me because I have a lot of friends who are very, very adept in the world of tactics, and they know their stuff, and they are all expecting this to be a disaster. So the fact that it hasn't been a disaster has been interesting. And I think, like I said, a lot of that comes down to the fact that maybe Leeds is just the right club for him, just about the sort of level of importance and tradition, but also high enough up the leagues that they have good enough players to be able to play his system.
So what is Marcelo Bielsa doing right, say, that Christiansen and Paul Heckingbottom especially didn't do? Because I think we all looked for him. I mean, we had this conversation last season when Christiansen was doing fairly well, all right. And then I don't know if we talked about Paul Heckingbottom, but I think there was a lot of, I wouldn't say excitement, but maybe he was the right appointment, a young British manager with a pedigree, especially, you know, known in Yorkshire, leaving Barnsley how he did. I thought he'd have done a fair bit better, but it didn't seem to have worked out for them at all. But for Bielsa, who kind of, there was a wariness about it, especially in tactical circles, as you said, and even in media circles with the, I mean, fabricated reputation that he came into the game with, well, to Leeds with. What has he done so right then that others weren't getting?
Yeah, that's a good question. And you know, I think the reason why people like Paul Heckingbottom, this is just an aside, I think, is because his surname is basically a place that most Leeds fans could potentially live in. You know, it sort of sounds like a Yorkshire village, right? So I think a lot of that came down to the fact that he sort of sounded like he could be a good Leeds manager. But with Bielsa, I mean, what Bielsa's done is he's a thorough manager. And he's not simply, I think you mentioned in the intro this, or maybe before we came on air, that, you know, this sort of reputation that Bielsa has of being loco, which is an interesting topic of conversation as it is, because he hates the nickname El Loco, which basically means, I guess, the madman. I've been in press conferences and I've listened to all of his press conferences at Leeds, and he will never use the phrase El Loco. He will say, well, you guys have this nickname that you use of me, and so I suppose this answer maybe sounds a little bit like why you might think that of me. He came out with the phrase he came out with, it's hard to play bad football or something like that. And he was like, you know, actually that sounds batshit. But then you have this nickname for me. And so I think the reason why he rejects that nickname is because what other people perceive of as being insane or obsessive, I think he sees as being responsible. He is a football manager. He has to, to the best of his ability, do his job. And to do that, you have to be entirely thorough. So he turns up to the club and he's watched every game from last season. He knows exactly where players have played. He's watched training games of under 23s, etc. He's watched hours and hours of footage. He's thought about the way that the club can improve, the way that individual players can improve. And he comes with this background. He comes with a clear target goal of what he wants the team to play like. And he implements that and changes the various training regimes and the backroom staff and the medical staff such a way as he can achieve that. Now, some people perceive that as sort of madness. For him, that's just being a responsible manager. And I think what he has done well is precisely implemented that system. He's got the players playing in a particular way, and it's a system that works. And for the most part, I suppose it's the matches against West Brom where we get pasted by them, where it becomes frustrating for the Leeds fans to watch that, because in many respects there is no plan B, really. We have the system. The system is what is going to get us promoted or not, and there are tweaks within that system. And the question is whether or not that system will hold out for the whole season. What he's done well is implemented this system. Whether or not it will serve us well for the whole season remains to be seen. So I think that's kind of the point that a lot of us are at. We sort of think, yes, it's been great. But, you know, this happens with many teams where you think of Antonio Conte's Chelsea, where the season where they won the Premier League, they came out, changed their system, had this system which they used all the way through. And then they got halfway through the season and all the teams had played that system. And there was already counter systems that were designed to react to that. So I think, yeah, the very thing that he's been good at, the thing that he's done well, is also the thing that could maybe harm us in the long run, but it remains to be seen.
I think if you trust in a manager to change and adapt and maybe tweak their system to get the best out of the team, I believe we'd all trust in Bielsa to do that if we were speaking as neutrals. But then again, would a manager with that, you know, the length of history he has in the game, would he be willing to do that, or would he go down with a ship, so to speak, with his ideas?
Yeah, it's a good question. And, you know, one of the things I'm thinking about at the moment is how, like, what sort of legacy will Bielsa have, and what role will his time at Leeds have on that legacy? Because, you know, there's that famous interview, I think it was after the Sheffield Wednesday game, where he was some Sky Sports reporter gets the post-match interview because it's been on TV and says, oh, you know, you're really good at winning titles and stuff. And his response is, well, thanks for your generosity, but I think most people know that I'm not good at winning titles, and it's not particularly hard for people to find out, like, my managerial record. So I think the question that I have is how much of his identity as a manager is tied up with this, the fact that he's been at various clubs where they've done quite well but not quite well enough. He's won a couple of titles at Newell's Old Boys in South America right at the beginning of his career, and then he won an Olympic gold medal with the Argentina team, and beyond that he had a good season with Athletic Club in Bilbao. And they basically got to the final of the Europa League. They beat Man United that season. Then they got to the final of the Copa del Rey. They lost both of them 3-0. They had the chance to sort of maybe finish in the top four in La Liga, and they dropped off. And so, yeah, one of the things that it's very, like, we've already talked about the fact that, you know, how narrative functions within football. And one of the narratives that has sort of accrued to Bielsa is this sort of idea that he's very influential on big managers. He's a sort of genealogical source for managers like Pep Guardiola, Mauricio Pochettino, or Tata Martino, or Brizzo, managers like that who are well respected, but he's never really been able to enact that sort of success within his own life. Now, why is that? Is that because he has this system that he relies upon and can't tweak it, and is happy to go down with the ship? Or is there all these other contextual facets playing in the background, which I think is actually the case if you actually look at the teams that he's had? I mean, the fact that he lost in a Copa del Rey final to Barcelona, lost a Europa League final to Atletico Madrid, those aren't particularly like unexpected happenstances. They're not the sort of thing that you'd say, well, that's a real disappointment. His career promised so much, and then he lost with a sort of fairly mid-table La Liga side to these other Atletico Madrid obviously weren't quite so big as they were at that point in 2012, I think it was. But even still, you know, they weren't underdogs by any stretch. So, yeah, the question that sort of is running through my mind at the moment is how much of the stuff that we think about when we think about Marcelo Bielsa is simply imposed upon us by these sort of narratives that we like to spin about football. I tend to think that, and you know, there's another facet to this. If I can go on without risking waffling, but the other facet is that I think for a lot of managers there is this notion of pragmatism that emerges, and Bielsa will talk about pragmatism as well. He'll say, look, as soon as football becomes professionalized vis-a-vis the capital, as soon as people start putting capital into a club in order to improve teams, then results become important. Everyone knows that there's a sort of level of pragmatism. That's the reason why Jose Mourinho is so well hired, because he got those results until recently. But Bielsa says, look, yes, there's a pragmatic aspect of football. We have to get results. But at the same time, he will say, but you know, the most important thing about football is also the fans. If you don't have the fans, you don't need to have results. Like, the only reason that we're having any of these, that football is booming at the moment, is because so many people care about it. And fans care about the quality of the football. So you can't just simply talk about idealism versus pragmatism for Bielsa. You have to talk about both together. So he sees very clearly that, you know, football is as important as a spectacle as it is a sort of, I guess, business. And so whenever you talk about something like this with Bielsa, like how will people think about him in the future, then you have to remember that he does care about the fans as much as he cares about the owners getting their way, and he's trying to balance those two off. So the question for me becomes, you know, will we get to the end of the season? Will Leeds miss out on promotion, but will it have been a good season? And will that mean that Bielsa will be disappointed? I don't know. So all these different questions come questions that sort of get thrown up by that one question. So hopefully that answered that question without having been too rambly.
I think Leeds, they occupy one of the top two places now, and I think many people are looking at Norwich and expecting them to drop off. But with Leeds, I think a lot of people, especially those who might not have the knowledge of Bielsa or his career as yourself, I think they're looking for Leeds to stay put and pretty much keep the pace for the rest of the season. A lot of Villa fans especially seem quite, I wouldn't say nervous, but wary of Leeds more so than other teams that we faced. And I mean, we clash on Sunday the 23rd of December, just before Christmas. And a lot of people are looking at this match and thinking, hey, if Villa want to go up top two, they need to win this. So very much for Leeds, is it an expectation of Leeds fans to stay put for the rest of the season in those top two positions? Is it an expectation of Leeds and Bielsa to win the title, if not come up as second place?
Now, that's an interesting question, because I think, you know, what Leeds' expectations are and what everyone else's expectations are may have quite a big gap between them. And I think because of the recent history of Leeds United, and as I said before, you know, the fact that even now our owners' finances and companies' situations is in the immediate news is a worry to Leeds fans, because we are so used to off-field events impinging on-field events. But in terms of what you're saying about us being in the top two and our staying power in that top two, I think I was having a conversation with a friend this morning who's also a Leeds fan, and we were both remarking on the fact that when you look at the championship table as it is, you look at the teams and you try and determine like who's been the most consistent team in the top at the top of the table, and it kind of has to be Leeds. And it's funny because I think as Leeds fans we feel as though we've started off well, and then we've maybe dropped off a little bit, and yet we're still getting these results. So even yesterday against Bolton, we played well enough. We played well enough to deserve the win, but it wasn't as if that win was the sort of win where you think, well, you know, it was coming. It could well have got to 0-0 and finished that way. And you know, look, Bolton struggling at the moment, bottom of the table, and yet they've managed to hold Leeds to a 1-0 loss, and then they nearly held to a 2-2 draw at Norwich the week before. So there is that glorious sort of I don't know, intertwining of the championship where the top and the bottom can still cause one another problems. But you would have to say on the balance of it that Leeds just seem to have at the moment, they seem to be the team who have that staying power. There's so many clubs that we've seen this season. For example, Middlesbrough, you would have thought at one point, oh, they'll easily make it into the top two and we'll stay there. And they've dropped away. Sheffield United, similarly. You know, and that's the thing about it. At the moment, Leeds do look like the team to beat in the top two. And so, yeah, it all depends, I think, on how this Christmas period goes. Because, like I said, we've got the bare bones of a defense at the minute. We had Calvin Phillips playing as a centre back in a back two, which is far from ideal. He's played as a centre back in between two centre backs in a back three, which is fine. I have no problem with that. But when you start playing him as a centre back in the back two, because it's either him or Apo Halma, who's a Finnish player who's quite young and he has only just come back from injury, and yeah, you know, he doesn't have that sort of experience that you want him to have playing in the back two in a club at the top of the league. So it will depend on whether or not we can weather, I think, the Christmas period. If we can come out and then get a few of our players back. So we've got Izzy Brown, we've had on loan all season, despite the fact he's been injured. He's back soon. Patrick Bamford scored yesterday. He's been injured for a long while. We've got Luke Ayling, who's a very important defender for us, coming back soon. As I mentioned before, Gaetano Berardi will be back as well. So feels like we're getting a few players back, and it almost feels as though January will be a successful transfer window, even just for those players coming back. So if we can weather that storm, I think we can go into the second half of the season with the positivity that we may well be there and thereabouts in the top two at the end of the season. But I think if you ask Leeds fans how confident they are of that fact, you'll get lots of negative answers. We've got you at the weekend. A lot of Leeds fans are expecting us to get pasted by you. We've got Forest soon after that. We've got Derby as well in that run. So a lot of big teams coming up, and with a thin squad, it feels a little bit precarious at the moment.
Let's talk about that for this festive period coming up, because it's especially important, as you said, since it kicks off with Villa playing your Leeds on the 23rd, and that starts off that hectic run of games I think we encounter every season, and every season it seems to take some casualties. I think the expectation there then is that Leeds may be one of these casualties, but I guess that will depend on Villa having a really good game against you. We weren't at our best against Stoke. I wanted to ask you, how much have you seen of the two sides of Villa this season? I mean, the first, as Steve Bruce, and you said the phrase there or thereabouts, which was his kind of key motto that he relied on throughout his career, and we were never there or thereabouts. You know, you can only be there in the championship. There's no thereabouts for us. It was that promotion or nothing. But we've been saved, I guess, and we've got Dean Smith now. So I wanted to hear any thoughts you may have had about Villa, the two phases of Villa especially.
No, it would be wrong of me to tout myself as an expert on Villa. I've watched a few games. I watched the West Brom game I mentioned to you, which I found very exciting. I find, obviously, Dean Smith has been exciting for you guys, right? You had that 5-5 result, which is just crazy. Yeah. And you've had some good results. You had the result against Derby County, I think. There was a good result. You obviously won the Derby with Birmingham.
The first one.
Yeah. So I think that you've obviously turned a corner. I was very negative about Bruce on the last few times I've been on your podcast, and he sort of strung along for quite a while. But I do think that Dean Smith is obviously a positive move for you guys. There's a lot of Leeds fans who I speak to who want Dean Smith after we lose Bielsa, thinking that far ahead. So I think there's no danger. There's no doubt that you're in good hands. And I think, you know, with time, once Smith's tactics are sort of embedded in the club, then you'll be in no problem whatsoever. So, and for me, it's just the quality of players that you have in your squad. And one of the most amazing things about Bielsa is that he's taken our squad of essentially misfits. We barely brought anyone in really over the summer, and he's made it work. So I suspect that with the squad that you guys have got, that Dean Smith will be able to do similarly, and you will. I do expect you to be up in the top six by the end of the season.
Fingers crossed, John. Very kind of you, especially coming from Leeds. Leeds, I mean, we don't often get that. I think any negative comment against Leeds on Twitter is met with some hostility, to say the least. I've been on the end of it. I've got, you know, the stats wrong, some facts wrong, and they don't take a much persuading to correct you at all. Now, I'm looking forward to the game on Sunday. It's now been moved from Saturday, so it's on Sunday the 23rd. I wanted your thoughts on a key player for Leeds that Villa fans might have to watch out for, because we're not expert. You know, we're not the experts on Leeds. I've barely watched Leeds this season. But I just wanted to hear your thoughts on who could cause us some worries.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what team is fielded at the weekend, on the weekend. Yesterday we played Lewis Baker, who's on loan from Chelsea, I think. Is that right? I might have got that wrong. I think he's right. And he had a terrible game and was brought off at half time, replaced by Jack Clark, who is one of our youngsters who's been really, really impressive. Within the team itself, I think if you were to ask most Leeds fans who you should watch out for, the answer would be either Jack Clark or Pablo Hernandez. Hernandez is obviously central to anything creative we do, pretty much, and is a very important player for us. But I would actually point out Adam Forshaw, who's playing as our deep line midfielder at the moment. For me, he's been an absolute joy to watch this season. He's one of those midfielders in a position where your job is to do everything right, and he does everything right. He's defensively solid. He's more than defensively solid. He's impressive defensively. His distribution is immaculate. He allows our midfield to be thin, if that makes any sense. He allows our attacking players to go forward, and it will offer the sort of cover that you need for that. So I think if Forshaw can have a good game, and I think that you will see that when we play on Sunday, you will appreciate what it is that I'm saying, because he's a very key player in this sort of team, because so much of the team is built around this notion of transitioning quickly, and then the result of that being that you have to be transition back quickly as well, and he really helps the team out to do that. He helps slow the ball play down and with counter attacks and stuff. So Adam Forshaw is the one to look out for. Well, Pablo Hernandez is the one to look out for in terms of danger. He's the one that you should be worried about. Adam Forshaw is the one worth looking out for if you want to see what it is about Leeds that makes them tick.
Question around then, and I appreciate you may not have the most insightful answer to this question. What member of the Villa squad are you or other Leeds fans looking at and going, you know, he could cause us some trouble?
Well, I'll tell you who that...
And this is with the expectation that with Jack Grealish, may not make it. Yeah. So I knew he was going to go
I had a number of friends send me the tweet that suggested that Grealish might not be playing at the weekend, and that's gone down very well amongst Leeds fans. I'm, as a Scotland fan, I'm a fan of McGinn, obviously. I'm excited about him. I think there's very few players who strike the ball quite so sweetly as he does. But I say as well, El Ghazi, I was impressed with in the game against West Brom. So I'm kind of worried about him, but I get the impression that maybe that West Brom game was like him playing out of his skin. So whether or not to expect that on a regular basis, I don't know. You'd have to tell me that.
Well, he's looked good. It's just against Stoke, we lacked Grealish. So our wingers and McGinn were getting double marked, considering we had Glenn Whelan. No one's going to mark Glenn Whelan. So we had an extra man on our players. So yeah, I think he was taken out of the game. Right. And I'm praying that Grealish is back for this one. We need to kind of conjure something up to make that kind of threat appear that will take a man away from your team to mark up our 10, I guess. But no, I don't think we're expecting Grealish, which is a shame, because I think he's a wonderful footballer. And I know I'm biased. I know it's very much in my camp to say that, but I think he's really good. He's quality. And it's a shame he's probably not playing in the Premier League this season. Yeah. I think he could have done some damage for Tottenham. I think he'd have gone maybe not straight away into their first team squad, but he'd have had a good shot of earning his chance. But yeah, I think you'll miss him. I think you won't see him this coming Sunday. Yeah. So that's a shame for us especially. But I think you guys might be licking your lips at that.
Yeah, I think that's the general impression I've been given.
Well, we're coming to the kind of the end of the podcast. So what I wanted to get from you, something that we'll kind of look out for, what is the weakness in this Leeds team on match day that Villa can look to exploit? I'm hoping Dean Smith's listening.
Yeah. So like I said before, you know, this team is all about building play up from the back in order to sort of pull oppositions across, get the ball forward quickly, and then do this sort of overload to isolate, so that you'll get a lot of the attacking players will drift over to the side the ball's on, and then you'll have a couple of players on the opposite side waiting for a switch that they can exploit. So the biggest issues that we have is losing possession in the build up phase at the moment, because we haven't got as many of the best ball players in our squad playing. There's been a tendency for a few of the players in the deeper part of the team to give the ball away in silly positions, in positions where we are starting to transition into attacking structure. And so it means that we're very thin on the ground. So if you lose the ball there, a counterattack just ruins us. So I suspect that's what you should be looking to do, I think. Break up the build-up play at key moments, and then launch a quick counterattack from those sorts of areas. Now, a lot of that was done through Lewis Baker. I suspect those breakdowns were being done through Lewis Baker, so I suspect he won't play on Sunday. So it may be not quite so an effective approach as it has been in the past. But there is a tendency for this team to go from looking like Barcelona, just sort of pinging the ball around, one touch passing, to making ridiculously some of the turnovers that we give the ball away in scenarios where you just kind of think that's just madness. I can't believe that you've misplaced that pass, or you've invited pressure and not got rid of the ball, etc. I suspect that's the best way of getting to this Leeds team. So sitting a little bit deep in a mid block, and then sort of really attacking them when they're trying to do the build up phase. I think that will be the way to get around beating this Leeds side, and then try and look for the space in behind the wing back, full backs who get quite advanced in those areas. So
yeah, the final point to make about this Villa Leeds match coming up on Sunday is that I'm going to need to take your prediction from you. Unfortunately, you're going to have to either say that your team's going to get beat, or you're going to have to come onto here, hostile territory, and tell me I'm going to get beat. Or there's room for a draw, I guess.
Yeah, I might be diplomatic and say we'll go for a draw, but I can't see there being, I can't see there not being some kind of result either way. I'm feeling quite pessimistic at the moment, and I think we've had a quite nice run of games with teams, so I expect you guys to win. But whether or not you're West Bromwich Albion, us, I don't know. It could be a fairly dour game that sort of ends with a one goal decider, or it could just be an absolute shoeing 4-0. So I'll say something like Villa to win somewhere between 1-4-0.
Oh, thank you, John. Thank you for coming on and telling us that. I'm pretty sure the listeners will appreciate that. Moving on to wrap up now and close the podcast off. Word on the street is you're constructing, or in the process of constructing, a book on Marcelo Bielsa's time at Leeds United. Is that correct?
That is correct, yes.
And when will this be, you know, will it be coming out, I guess, at the end of the season? Yeah. Is that too optimistic?
Well, so I'm currently in the phase of talking to agents about it. So the publication is a long way off. The research is well underway though. So I've got a proposal written now. I've sorted out all of the structure. I'm starting to do some of the writing. And I gave a paper at an academic conference recently that sort of had a couple of aspects of the book, sort of bits of the introduction, bits of one of the sections as well. So I've got all of those things sort of playing around in my head at the moment, which is probably why some of those answers are a bit rambly for you. But essentially it's about Marcelo Bielsa's time at Leeds and what his time at Leeds as a sort of springboard into the rest of his life. So there's been no English treatments of Marcelo Bielsa, really. There's Jed Davis, a guy called Jed Davis, who's a coach over in Canada, has written a book. It's called Revolution, The Philosophy of Marcelo Bielsa, but it's not so much about Bielsa as Jed Davis's ideas about how football should be played tactically, and he obviously uses Bielsa as a source, and tries to develop a football tactic in the same way that Bielsa would. So it's not really about Bielsa per se. So I'm trying to fill that gap and write something about Bielsa, but particularly using his time at Leeds and trying to use that as a springboard and say what do we learn about him from the way that he's comported himself at Leeds. But it starts off the book with an introduction that sort of that uses the example of Gator Lee's writing, who is an American journalist in the, I guess this must be 60s or 70s. Yeah, 66, I think he wrote his piece, Frank Sinatra Has a Cold. So he was asked to write a piece on Sinatra, but Sinatra refused to speak to Esquire magazine, who he was working for. And I use this as part of the intro. The intro is, how do you write a book about someone? How do you write about someone who doesn't want to be written about? Because Bielsa is similar. Bielsa doesn't really want to be in the public eye in that kind of way. And that sort of sets the context for how do you write about someone like Marcelo Bielsa? And so what I'm doing is I'm taking themes. It's sort of more like an intellectual biography. I'm taking themes about his life. So things like language, he's very, very careful about the language that he uses. And he's thought very carefully about how words are important for managers. So there'll be a chapter on language. There's a chapter on his tactics and looking at the way that he tries to manipulate space with his players. There's a chapter on the places that he's managed and what that says about his views on the world. There'll be a chapter on the controversy. There'll be a chapter on his legacy. How do we talk about how Leeds fits into his legacy? There's a few others in there as well. Sorry, I can't remember them all off the top of my head. But what I'm trying to do is just sort of get, there'll be sort of a series of essays about Bielsa, trying to get to the heart of what he's doing and what he's about. So yeah, if that sounds interesting, then keep an eye out for it.
Well, you know, I'm interested. I think I've been harping on at you about this for it was rumored that you were doing it, or I don't know if the idea was even
the
there.
The book will be written. It may not ever be published. But you know, if it does get written, then it will be available in some way. So it will happen. I promise you.
Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to it. Any chance to learn more? Because it's just broadening your horizons as it is when you bring people like yourself on this podcast to talk about teams we're facing. But yeah, John, thanks for coming on. That's it for us today. Where can people find you then? Your work, your name, where is it?
Yeah, best place to get me is on Twitter. So I'm at John_McKenzie on Twitter, and that's John JON and McKenzie with an AMACK. So yeah, that'll help you remember. But thanks very much for having me on. I've really enjoyed it. Always do.
No worries. Thanks for coming on, John. You can find him at the Team of John O'Shea's podcast, and especially the Morans episodes or series, which is rather amusing and insightful as well. But yeah, thanks for coming on, John, and we'll catch up soon after Leeds hopefully lose to Aston Villa. So goodbye, guys. See you soon.
All the best.